The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio, my engineer and producer, on the other side of the glass. And together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It's Monday, the 18th of March, 2018. You're listening to 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted local news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Podcasts, of course, are available for you 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number is 790-2040 if you'd like to join in the conversation, especially today in the first half hour with our Monday political face-off on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The Monday political face-off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, and hanging systems and hanging. Well, basically, Moe will got something to cut up on the wall. He'll take care of it. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, right by Copenhagen. And of course, on the internet, moesgallery.com. It is time for our Monday political face-off. With me in studio, seated to my right, commentator John Munger, Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, and Republican candidate for Arizona governor. Jeff Rogers, Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, how was your weekend?
John, wonderful good? Weekend. Had I hope you one? Gentlemen had a good weekend.
We did. And Jeff, how about you?
Very nice. Beautiful weather.
And your Indiana Hurrying Hoosiers, Jeff, coming from the Indiana, and of course where basketball is king. Like Arizona, Indiana will be on the sidelines. Well, Indiana will probably go to the NIT. Arizona will not. But still, in a state like Indiana that lives and dies basketball, is that 2 years now without going to the big dance?
It is 2 years, and people are not very pleased back there. There were times I can remember when we had as many as six teams from Indiana go to the NCAA tournament. Now this year it's just Purdue, the only one.
Ball State, you had a bunch of them.
Ball State, you've got Notre Dame, you've got Indiana State, University of Evansville. You know, that's there are multiple Division I schools, and usually there's, you know, three, four, five, sometimes six teams from Indiana, but this time it's not. And the thing they have in common is the Miller brothers.
Sean's younger brother is the coach in Indiana.
Yep, and some of the similar problems show up in both of them. They're both very defensive-oriented coaches, but don't have a really great offense. Mm-hmm. And as you could remember from this year, Arizona struggled offensively a great deal all year long.
Do you think Sean Miller, John Munger, will be back? What's your thinking?
Well, yes.
U of A spent a lot of money on legal fees to check out his...
Having sat on the Board of Regents, I can tell you that, of course, everyone's aware that when the issue came up, the Board of Regents hired two large law firms in Phoenix to investigate whether Sean had any exposure. And they determined that they couldn't find any exposure that he had. And therefore, the Board of Regents and the university has backed Sean Miller 100% openly. And my view is that if there was anything out there, they would have backed away right away, but they haven't backed away. He's not going to be fired, in my opinion. The only thing that could come up is that somehow he gets caught in a perjury trap. He's going to testify. We were talking before the show. Importantly, he's going to testify for the defense. The prosecution is not calling him, which is telling, because if the prosecution wanted to catch him in a perjury trap, they would be calling him. He's being called by the defense. Unless there's something out there where he perjures himself at the hearing, I think he's home free.
Mm. The rampage in New Zealand, horrible situation, 50 lives, 50 lives gone, a lot of people still fighting for their lives. Jeff Rogers, the New Zealand Parliament today said they pretty much signed off on what could be some of the most restrictive gun laws in the world.
Well,
and they say they'll have them in place within 10 days.
And I think they probably will. But if we look back at their neighbor Australia, after the last mass shooting that they experienced, wrote some of the toughest gun laws in the world, and they haven't had a mass shooting ever since. And so I think we can probably expect something similar from New Zealand, probably a ban on assault-style weapons, ban on, you know, large magazines for ammunition, things like that. But, you know, it's quite a contrast to what happens here. I think as we were talking before the show started, I never have much faith that our Congress and president will enact anything very strict after most of these shootings. But the one in Las Vegas, I thought was probably the one that I thought, well, this might move them to do something about this. And of course they haven't. There's the one tiny thing they did do is they interpreted certain laws in such a way that this bump stock is now being banned in the opinion of the government. I don't know if that'll withhold scrutiny in the courts, but we can hope so.
John, what are some of your thoughts on this?
Well, we just had another shooting today. 5 people were killed in Holland. Guns are completely banned in Holland, not just assault weapons, but all kinds of guns. And yet, there was a shooting in Holland. Every day, there's a shooting. And I get real tired of people reacting. The world has 7 billion people in it. We shouldn't just react to every wacko that goes out and does something and start restricting everybody else who follows the law. My view is that you're going to have wackos on both sides. This guy was clearly an avowed Nazi, which is neither conservative or liberal. It's a whole different deal. His favorite person, his mentor in life, was Oswald Mosley, who was the famous British Nazi before World War II. This guy wasn't, he doesn't like Trump.
Although he said he admired him.
Yeah, wasn't that in his manifesto that he admired Trump?
Said he admired him, but he didn't like his ruling ability or something of that sort.
Yeah, and he said he's not a conservative. So people keep jumping to conclusions. We have these wild moves. We're responding to every extremist in the world. It's got to stop. We've got to recognize that by far, far and away, the great majority of the public, not just the majority, 99% of the public are normal people. And you're going to have, out of 7 billion people, you're going to have a few wackos out there. And you don't run around like Keystone Cops and try to respond to every wacko out there, because it affects the rights of everybody else. And as happened in Holland today, even where guns are completely restricted, and as happens every day in Chicago, guns are completely restricted. You still have murders, mass murders.
Jeff?
Well, here's the thing. Most polls show that 90% of Americans believe that we should have criminal background checks run on any transfer of weapons, period. 90% of the public also agrees that we should ban large ammunition weapons, and also that we should ban the sale of these assault-style weapons. So there's universal agreement almost amongst that. And that's not going to eliminate all the crazies. There's crazies that will get their hands on guns, perhaps even illegally. But what it does do is it limits the amount of carnage that can be created in a single incident. I mean, if the guy who shot Gabby Giffords hadn't had these huge ammunition clips, you know, he could have been taken down sooner. As a matter of fact, he got taken down when he emptied a clip and was getting ready to reload, and some courageous people disarmed him and held him down for the police. But So that limited the amount of damage he could do. But if he hadn't had these large repositories of bullets, then he couldn't have would have had to basically reload sooner, and the harm could have been less. So I think we can all agree that there are some reasonable things we can do. In a country like America, we have to be realistic and do the things that are realistic. And I think those things are realistic: background checks, size of ammunition clips, and an assault-style weapons ban, which we had for 10 years and was allowed to expire during the W. Bush administration.
Well, I have a comment on that. I think that the public agrees, I certainly agree, that we ought to have background checks on anybody with a gun. And however you can accomplish that, fine. But the real problem is we don't have background checks that check on mental illness. That's difficult to do, but people that are mentally ill, and I'm not telling you how to do this, people that are mentally ill, fine. They should not, if they're a threat or a potential threat, they shouldn't be having a gun. The problem is that we don't do background checks for mental illness.
Well, we do a little bit of it.
Not enough.
Here's what we do, because I've had clients who were in this database before, is that if you are involuntarily committed against your will, your name is entered into a database. So a Title 36 commitment, even if it's for 72 hours or whatever, that does get put into the DPS database, and you would be stopped and not allowed to possess a weapon. And recently, the legislature changed that slightly to allow you to then go back to a court and show that mental illness is no longer with you, and therefore you should be able to get your right to bear firearms back. So we'd have that limited capacity, but it's not universal amongst all the states.
That's
and it's a little bit of a slip and miss problem that we have.
We're going to take a break right here. It's 10:30. The Voice, trusted local news and talk. It's our Monday political face-off. Jeff Rogers is here and John Munger. If you'd like to join us, 790-2040. The political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Now, coming very soon, hopefully within a few days, they're working out some of the kinks on getting my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They'll have breakfast. The hot breakfast is coming, and hopefully within a week or so. Mona's is located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. And they are located, again, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Hot breakfast is coming. That's going to be a great addition to Mona's Danish Bakery. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com, and, of course, buckmastershow.com. We'll continue on the face-off with John Munger and Jeff Rogers right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Back. It is the Monday Political Face-Off. Jeff Rogers with me and John Munger. The Face-Off presented by Moe's Gowrie and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgowrie.com. Jeff and John, of course, the internet is good for a lot of things, and unfortunately it's bad for other things, like it can be used as a recruitment tool for ISIS or white supremacy. There's been some calls, and Elizabeth Warren, who is running for president, has talked about trying to break up big tech. It'd be pretty hard to do, wouldn't it, Jeff?
Well, I think so. It's not like we were discussing earlier about the telephone companies and that were broken up in the 60s and 70s, where you had one giant telecom company that then had its associated companies in each state. And AT&T was ordered by the government to divest itself of what they then called the baby bells, which were the state-by-state telephone companies. And so that's a kind of vertical monopoly. And then there are horizontal monopolies where you control all of maybe one product range or one type of maybe all, like the Hunt family tried to do with silver in the 70s. I don't see that there's anything about Facebook or Google or some of these tech companies that lends itself to any kind of antitrust action against them, because they're just different by nature. And so I don't know what Ms. Warren is referring to or what she's got up her sleeve, but it doesn't sound to me like it's economically or legally viable to break up these companies.
They could do more, John, couldn't they, to police themselves?
Well, they, of course, but that they claim they're doing that already. I think that she will try to regulate it just like the banks. She'll try to regulate somehow. She's inevitably going to impact free speech, and that'll be heavily, heavily litigated because they're going to say, look, we can say anything we want. But she's going to try to regulate it. I agree with Jeff. His legal analysis is correct, in my opinion. But she will come up with some more regulations to try and regulate it. I think ultimately the answer is free enterprise. I, for one, no longer participate in Facebook. A lot of people don't. It's impacting Facebook. Twitter is no longer out there all by itself. It's got competitors. Google, different story, because it really has a monopoly. Bing has tried to compete with it, and there are some others. But I just think that, there have been companies that we thought would never end. and they've gone away. Or look at IBM. When IBM started, they were the only one.
Yeah, the only one in town, weren't they?
And you can go on down the line with companies that had these kinds of monopolies. They weren't broken up for antitrust reasons. They were just, they developed competition, and I think that's what's going to happen. Even the Chinese are coming out with competitors of Google, Google now. Mm. So it will happen. And I think that we need to trust that over a period of time, competition will develop as people refuse, as I've refused, to participate in Facebook. I don't even go there anymore.
But what can be done about this? These horrible videos like the Rampage in New Zealand that just go viral immediately? Nothing can be done, huh?
Well, I was reading an article this morning that talked a little bit about that they brought in some kind of special group at Facebook to try to pull down every time somebody would attempt to put up the video of this massacre. They would either take it down or try to block it from going up, but that it just took, you know, dozens of people working round the clock, and they still couldn't fight them off. And so some of it's a technology issue, which, you know, they're going to have to solve. But some of it might, you know, these companies, while they can't really be broken up and aren't susceptible for antitrust regulation, that doesn't mean that there aren't some other reasonable regulations that we could pass that could make them safer and more palatable to people. But I think one thing we've got to do is lean on them, probably not necessarily in the way of passing laws, but to say, you know, you really need to police yourself and police these right-wing hate groups that use this as a recruiting tool.
What's this right-wing hate group?
There's a wonderful article that I'd recommend people take a look at this morning in the Washington Post by Philip Bump, where he talks about how the Islamic State used these videos, Facebook, and other kinds of things to recruit and get people interested in that. And he compares that to white supremacist groups that are doing the same kinds of things, both in America and elsewhere. And it leads to the same results. It takes people who have a tendency to want to mimic this behavior, and maybe they find other people that they can engage in violence with. And so,
well, Jeff,
it's a real problem.
I don't think you
see liberal groups using this to create violence.
Well, Jeff, I disagree with you. The guy that shot Steve Scalise playing baseball, the congressman.
You're right. That's the one exception.
There are multiple exceptions, Jeff.
That's the only one.
Get off of this right-wing extremist group. There are all kinds of extremist groups from both sides. And one of the problems I have is that we always devolve into that. There are extremists everywhere. This guy in New Zealand was a Nazi. And one of the problems I had is that people are saying, oh, he's some kind of conservative. No, he wasn't. He was a Nazi. Nazis were socialists. He specifically disavowed being a conservative.
He was a white supremacist. And we're seeing a spate of white supremacists ever since Trump emerged in 2016.
He wasn't a conservative.
The Anti-Defamation League has said that white extremist violent attacks have increased by 73% in America since Donald Trump ran for president.
Well, that may be what they say, but all I'm saying is 73% from what base? How much is that? But the point is that there are extremists all over the place from all over the world. And they take all different forms. I don't deny there are white extremist groups. There are also black extremist groups. There are also Hispanic extremist groups. There are Muslim extremist groups. There are all kinds of extremist groups. And to just blithely say they're all right-wing white supremacist extremist groups just isn't right. Well, let me go back to your question. One of the problems I have with trying to control Facebook, you can get this video on the internet. It isn't just Facebook. I mean, solving the problem on Facebook doesn't solve the problem on the internet. You can get any information on the internet. And here we are talking about Facebook.
You can pick them up on YouTube and other places as well.
You can pick it up any place. And that's my point, is we get all wound up talking about how, oh, we're going to solve some problem. We're going to eliminate guns. Well, we eliminated guns in Chicago. They eliminated guns in Holland. There's still shootings going on.
Okay.
We need to quit responding by running around like Keystone Cops and trying to respond to everything by some governmental solution. And we need to recognize that there are, I'm sorry, it's not a perfect world.
All right, John Munger and Jeff Rogers, thank you, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. On the Monday Political Face-Off, hope you have a great week. All right, the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge by Copenhagen, and at moesgallery.com. Stop by and see Moe. Take care of all of your framing needs. We'll continue now on the Buckmaster Show, 12:30. We'll be right back on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 Ocean and Beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Monday afternoon on 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Green Things doing such a great job over on River Road, 3384 East River Road, 13 acres of amazing plants, trees, and annuals. And stop by, they now have Zocalo Village, all that great merchandise, including the Talavera pottery, the antiques, fine art, handmade furniture, all on the Green Things site. Zocalo for years was over by Country Club on Broadway. They're now at Green Things. Check it out, greenthingsaz.com, and you've got a great combination. All of your plants and all the great material for your home, and there's some really nice material like handmade furniture there at Zocalo. Check it out. As an Arizona taxpayer, you have a unique opportunity to direct your tax money to schools and charities that you support and believe in. You have to make a donation up front, but provided you stay within the prescribed limits, you get back dollar for dollar every buck in the form of a tax credit. One of the nonprofits standing to benefit from the tax credit is Catholic Community Services, which has been in this town since the early 1930s. Liz McMahon is with us. She is the Director of Development. Hey, Liz, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing very well. What's the latest thinking on this tax credit? And the legislature can't seem to decide. I've heard that it perhaps was extended till mid-June, that folks can delay paying their taxes. What do you hear?
I probably hear the same thing you do, which is nobody
really
knows.
Really nothing definitive.
There's no decision made at this point in time. So we're telling everybody, if you have someone who helps you prepare your taxes, stay in good touch with those folks.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people have already filed their taxes, mm-hmm. and whether that's going to be A-okay for them or not is yet to be seen.
But what we know for sure is there is this tax credit. And if you could articulate for us, what does all of it mean? And it's for a married couple filing jointly. They can give
a gift to a not-for-profit organization, right, serving people who are in need, mm-hmm. and they can claim a tax credit up to $800 when they ultimately do file their taxes.
Right. So, and that's a nice chunk if they decide to put that money toward the Catholic Community Services. How would the money be used by Catholic Community Services?
We use it to support a variety of programs. We have a whole range of services that we provide throughout the 9 counties of southern Arizona. And it's geared specifically to help what had been called working poor families. Mm-hmm. So it's people who are struggling to get by, and we help them with things like, I know your next guest is going to be talking about early childhood education.
Right, yes.
That's one of the services that we provide.
Mm-hmm.
We also provide transitional housing for homeless families or near homeless families. We provide food to people. We meet fundamental needs of individuals and families in our communities.
And if someone needs services, how do they get started with you?
They can come to any of our locations. They mm-hmm. can call us at 520-623-3344, mm-hmm. or they can go to our website, which is ccs-soaz.org. And I think I said the phone number wrong, 623-0344. Sorry
okay.
about that.
Or just Google.
Google Catholic Community Services and find us. And we have lots of different locations. So in determining what you are looking for will determine what location we ask you to come to. And there are some eligibility requirements for some of the services.
Sure. And Catholic Community Services has been in the news lately over at the former Benedictine Monastery.
Yes.
You've been helping out people. What has your mission been over there?
Humanitarian need. That's mm-hmm. all we're doing. These are all folks who have come through ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They've been screened, interviewed, deemed to have a credible case for filing for asylum. And so we greet them. We give them an opportunity to rest, to eat, to shower. They're all going to other places, so we help them with whatever things they're going to need for their journeys. We get them to the bus station. We help them make their arrangements. And that's the role that we play. It's really just humanitarian aid. And we're so grateful to the owner of the new owner of the Benedictine Monastery, because Ross Rolney has done just an outstanding job donating that space to us. And we're very pleased to be able to do this for folks who have been through such trauma.
And Ross has said he would continue this up until when he is ready to move forward with the new project there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's like the tax deadline. It keeps being extended
yes.
a little bit further.
Yeah.
Originally, we were only supposed to be there probably through May. And now I'm hearing we could be there through August, maybe even later than that, depending on his plans.
So Catholic Community Services is part of a coalition of area nonprofits who who have kind of teamed up to get the word out about this.
Yes, we have.
So how does someone find out what nonprofits are involved in that list?
We have a website, and it's called givelocalkeeplocal.org. Mm-hmm. And the number of not-for-profits that are involved in this keeps growing. I think we're over 30 now, and it's terrific because here we are all basically just wanting to educate the public about the tax credit, how it works. You give where your heart is, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not competition. We just really want people to know that they have this is a great opportunity to take advantage of this credit.
And I mentioned Catholic Community Services started in this community. What, 1932 was it?
1933.
Unbelievable.
Was in response to the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And again, same sort of thing. We were basically just trying to meet fundamental needs of people who were going through really, really tough economic times, and now 85 years later, we're here. We've changed. Mm-hmm. You know, we've grown. We've added services. We've gotten rid of services, depending on what the need was in the community. So it's all responsive to what's going on. But well, yeah, 85 years.
What would you say the major need is, the economic support through food programs and others in this community?
I think there's a lot of things. First of all, we do have a lot of poor individuals in the community, so fundamental needs are very important. But I think in addition to that, we really try to give people the resources they need so that they can make sustainably better lives for themselves and for their families. So it's not just the food box. It's taking someone who's having a hard time with their finances, teaching them budgeting, getting them started with a line of credit, having them understand the whole role that budgeting plays in a household so that they can improve their lives.
If someone's about ready to be thrown out or their power's about ready to be cut off, can you help people like that?
We have limited funds. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Sure.
In terms of trying to help individuals, they can always call us. We'll direct them to the nearest location, and then and also there are a lot of other organizations that also help with those types of things too, but there's always a need, Bill.
We hear this is just, we have more nonprofits here in Tucson probably per capita, and I've kind of wondered why that is. I think I'll try to answer my own question. We're such a caring community. I think we're really open to so many people and their needs. We really do care in this community.
Tucson is a wonderful community. It really is. And and I don't really have the information to know if there really are that many more.
Yeah, I mean, that's
or
what
it just
we hear.
Like
yeah.
Well, it can also be because of people like you who give us a platform, mm-hmm. an opportunity to go out and talk about the work that we do. So your awareness of those organizations is higher.
How did you get involved with this work?
Oh my goodness. I don't know. Isn't that awful? I've been doing it for so long. I first applied for a job that ended up being working with a group that was providing services, volunteer coordination through Child Protective Services, and that's how it started. It opened a whole new world for me,
mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it now for, I don't even like to think how many years, mm-hmm. 35 years, more than that, maybe 40 years.
How many people are you helping over at the former Benedictine Monastery? How many people are kind of coming and going.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're there for just really a short time, correct?
A very short time.
To get ready for the next chapter, really, in their lives.
Absolutely.
This is a kind of a way station, if you will.
You know, it's a place where they can come and feel safe and mm-hmm. comfortable and cared about and mm-hmm. respected. Mm-hmm. And the number of folks that we see really varies. I've heard there have been times when we've had 300 people released to us at one time.
Mm-hmm.
We've had probably 2,000 people through within the last few weeks. So it really varies on what is happening with ICE.
But, is it taxing your organization financially?
You know, I think the community, and actually not just the Tucson community, but we've received some national attention, and people have been very generous.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point in time,
you're okay.
We're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we couldn't have said that. We've been doing this since 2014,
right.
Just on a much smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, it was a little bit of a struggle for us, but we've got great volunteers. We've had great response from people like Ross Rolney in the community,
sure.
who have helped. So it's pretty amazing.
All right. We've been talking with Liz McMahon, Development Director for Catholic Community Services. Where can people find out more about this tax credit?
Okay, they can go to givelocalkeeplocal.org, which is the organization, the coalition of not-for-profits. They can also go to our website, just Google Catholic Community Services, and up we pop, and there's a link right on our homepage that takes you for tax credit information.
Wonderful. Liz, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right, it's 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're coming up on 12:45. Coming up next, Steve Lynn and Penelope Jacks. Both of them very instrumental in kind of reviving this effort for early childhood education in our community. We will find out what they have planned as we take our break here on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Moa Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This portion of our program presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just a 3-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of really some nice places to stay. If you've not been over there, we send so many of our listeners over there. They have a great time over in Silver City. So many recreation opportunities, including the world-famous Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Again, it's southwestnewmexico.org for more information. Well, in 2017, the city of Tucson voters were asked about Proposition 204, that was known as Strong Start Tucson, which would have provided affordable, high-quality early childhood education to thousands of kids. The voters rejected that. However, it has resurfaced, And Penelope Jacks and Steve Lynn are huge advocates for early childhood education, and they are helping out in this latest reincarnation, I guess we could call it, of getting early childhood education into this community. Steve and Penelope, nice to see you.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Bill.
So, Steve, we'll begin with you. What is the new plan?
Well, the new plan is to broaden the scope from City of Tucson to all of Pima County. There are about 27,000 3- and 4-year-olds in the county, and a number of those are below the poverty level. About 12,000 of those children are below 200% of the federal poverty level. Those are the kids that we really are interested in working with, because they're the most at risk in terms of their performance in school. And there's absolutely no question about the fact that if children get a good preschool start, they will succeed in school, they will read at third grade, they will do math at fifth grade, and they will graduate at 12th grade. Then they will go on to either community college or get a certification of some sort and go into the workforce or go to a four-year university. So our future workforce depends on school performance, and we think these children deserve a good, strong start to what they will do in school.
Penelope Jack, so this will be now, or is a proposal that the Pima County Board of Supervisors will be asked to look over, and coming up in May, the budget hearings, the proposal will be known as and is known as Pima County Preschool Investment Program. So what is this? What are the nuts and bolts of this program?
The nuts and bolts are pretty simple. We use the word investment because it's the most important part of this whole thing, that it's our county's investment in the future of the children and in the prosperity of our county. But basically, it's for every child under 200, every 3- and 4-year-old under 200% of the poverty line, and it will give them a full ride for high-quality preschool. And it will be run by the First Things First program, which has a great track record statewide in doing this work. And we are pretty confident that as we ramp up the program, there will be high-quality places for every child.
And what does this program cost?
It costs about $10,000 per child for high-quality preschool. So it kind of depends how many kids the county wants to fund at any given time. There are about 13,000 kids who would be eligible, some of whom receive other kinds of subsidies now. Most of them don't, though. So it's really up to the county how many kids they want to provide that kind of future for.
What do you say, Steve, to those in the community who say, we can't afford this?
I would say we can't afford not to. As a community, we have to invest in our children, and we have to invest in those children who are the most vulnerable to drop out of school and to cause problems. There are a number of studies that have been done nationally, Bill, that take a dollar invested in early childhood and tell you that it will bring back to the community somewhere between $8 and $16 in avoided costs, because these children will not be incarcerated later. They will not be on welfare later. They will not be in a situation where they're taking tax dollars and using them, but rather they're contributing to the economy. And so this early start is critical for people to succeed in school and to succeed beyond school. So I would say, you fill a pothole, and that pothole after a big rain is going to still be a pothole. You invest in these children, and by the time they get to high school and beyond, they will be paying back in ways that the community can only imagine.
790-2040, caller Sean would like to join in our conversation with a comment. Go ahead, Sean. You're with Penelope Jacks and Steve Lynn.
Bill, good afternoon. It's been a while since I've spoken to you. So this is taxpayer money, and the only problem I have, and I want to let you folks know that, I taught on the college level for 10 years. I'm not against education at all. But what I am against is the fact that we continually give away taxpayer money to programs that can be supported by other efforts within the community. We have pushed everything on our government instead of taking responsibility at the local level. All the assets that were available to us when we were growing up have dried up, and everybody points the finger at the government to pay for stuff. And we become the burden because we're the ones that are getting taxed for all of this. And I object to all of this because of the lack of pay being provided to our firefighters, our police, other agencies, emergency service personnel and whatnot. I totally agree with what you're saying. I just don't necessarily agree that it should be tax money.
Okay, Sean, thank you very much. Here's Penelope Jacks.
Well, Sean, every single child who does not get that start will be at risk for becoming a burden on the society and will cost us much, much more. We have a collective commitment to the children and to the future, and taxes are how we meet that collective commitment. We're not in competition with other county services. That supporting this will ultimately support all those other county services because those children will be contributing members of our community, and they will be paying taxes too.
And Steve, do you want to talk a little bit about what you consider the benefit-cost ratio?
Well, again, the Federal Reserve has done this study to determine exactly what the payback is for this kind of an investment. And depending on the circumstances and the geography, anywhere from $8 to $16 comes back for every one of the dollars invested. You know, the other point I would make to the caller, Sean, is that in our society, taxes pay for education by and large. Certainly, there are opportunities for parents to opt out of the public school system and pay for education on their own. But most societies, and certainly this one, has valued education to the point that we pay for K-12 education out of tax money. All we're asking for is an extension of that toward the lower end of the age group so that these children are ready for kindergarten when they show up and can do the work. You know, in Arizona, we have a law that says if you're not reading by third grade level at third grade, you're retained. And that means children who can't read at grade level will be held back. And there's no provision for those children to be held back with another cohort coming forward from second grade. Schools will be overcrowded. There will be difficulties. This is an investment to make sure that the most number of children who are the most vulnerable to not be reading at third grade level get a good head start in education and can pass that milestone and beyond.
Penelope, what's the next step now? Will there be some kind of an open forum or something before the Board of Supervisors, or where are you hoping to go from here?
Well, we've had a lot of community meetings, and there's a lot of conversation in both the print and electronic media about this. We have had one big open forum in the past, and the next step is a hearing before the Board of Supervisors at their budget hearing on May 14th at 9 o'clock, where every citizen will have an opportunity to show their support for early childhood education in our community at the Board of Supervisors meeting.
I've got about 30 seconds. Let's see if I can work Richard's comment in. Go ahead, Richard.
Bill, I certainly am in agreement with the money that's needed for these kids and our education in our country, much more so than we need for our military. By the way, our police and our fire are living very well in our society. They get great benefits, great health care, and an excellent retirement. Many are living in really nice neighborhoods and $250,000 homes. I see it every day.
Okay.
Those crocodile tears.
Okay.
Let's give it to the kids in our schools.
There you go. All right, Richard, glad we could work your comment in. I've got less than a minute to go. Steve Lynn, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Always a pleasure to see you. Penelope Jacks, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, my friend Steve Rivera talking about sports. Eye on the Ball is a very popular show here on The Voice from 1 to 3. It's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Steve Lynn, Penelope Jacks, and my wonderful engineer producer, Bob Dio, looking very sharp, still with a little carryover from St. Patrick's Day there, a little bit of hint of the green. I like it very much. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.